Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, June 2nd, 2016. And yes, I'm still alive. My web page got severely bombed, as most of you know who've tried to go there. It happened really prior to May 19th. We don't know really when. Anyway, there is a semblance of a web page that's been restored, and I'm working to build it up from that point. For a long, long time, every time I release a book, my web page gets hacked, my email gets dumped, my communication gets messed with, on and on and on. But this time, it was really severe. It took IT people a couple of weeks just to examine the situation, and then try and figure out how to rebuild it. It's nearly seven gigabytes of information, and it's a rather complex web page. It's not just a blog or repeated articles or posting of articles. It's all my own work. So there's a lot of material there, and was a rather special task to get it rebuilt. If you go there, you'll find that the counter doesn't work yet, other things. And so I'm working on rebuilding this. In the background, I'll be talking about this. My sales page, I've been redesigning. And so it's going to be a new modern version of a sales page. And people do keep using the old sale page. But first of all, please, if you need water filter stuff, the page has been blocked for a few weeks, so I hope there's some people out there that need water filter products and would go there. But of course, this is all a result of my reporting on Ecuador, and I'm not going to report much more on that. I've pretty much covered the topic, and it's still going completely unreported, unannounced. The only thing I have to add is that the United States gave absolutely nothing in terms of aid. And that's because the whole thing was set up by the United States to get the IMF in there to get them to sign loans that they could never repay so that the IMF could wheedle the control of the uranium deposits. And, of course, oil is a secondary issue. Thereafter, the uranium, which now is being divided up between Bolivia, Russia, and China, is... So anyway, just a little reporting on Venezuela. Venezuela has the U.S. has infiltrated a lot of the businesses. They're holding products back so that the people can't get them. And so then they report, oh, look at how terrible it is, these communist governments. No, they're getting the business down there. It's the U.S. is always spearheading this, but make no mistake, it's the World Bank again. Over a year ago, Honduras had a regime change. It was one of the last things that the hatchet lady Hillary Clinton, I see all the names on the internet. It's the last thing, one of the last things she did as Secretary of State was to send in some arms to some generals there to pull off a coup and relieve the elected government of their elected president. And so, anyway, then recently they've been shooting people in the streets. Hundreds and hundreds of people being murdered who are activists, spokespersons for the public, etc. Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely insane what's going on in Latin America. Not only here, but around the world. But when I started reporting on Ecuador, the situation there... of course, there was no news anywhere on any of this, and that's when my page just got pummeled. I got reports of people, they would send an email, the server at Google or AT&T or Verizon or whatever would change the address, my address, email address, and then send it back to the people saying undelivered changing the address. And, of course... that's absurd. That has to be done on purpose. So anyway, the bottom line is that my web page has been restored, and like I say, it wasn't the first time, and it's going to take some time for me to rebuild it and put the radio shows up. All the radio shows from May are missing. All the ones where I really talked about Ecuador are missing. So, of course, I have my own backups of those, and I'll be posting those again. So it takes time because everything has to go through cleansers and stuff like that to make sure that no viruses were put in there. Anyway, it's a huge, huge job, and I don't make anything off this. I lost a lot of business because of this, and of course that business supports this radio show. That's what they do. They try and destroy your income. That's what they did when they fired me from Cornell. They tried to get rid of my income so I'd go away and work someplace else and forget about what I'm doing. The only thing is, they didn't know me. A lot of the other people that I saw have problems at Cornell, independent scientists that just went their own way. They went away and got a job in engineering somewhere or whatever, did something else. I didn't. I knew I was right about what I was doing, my plasma discharge comet model, all the work I had done on the solar, how the sun works with the fusion, surface fusion, all of that was developed back in the 70s, solidified the late 70s while I was at Cornell. I wasn't going to drop that. And that's where I am today. So I'm still out there. And let me tell you something, too. The sites that copy me, none of them do anything like what I do. I do reporting on these international issues, political issues, where my science, my background, remember my degree, my advanced degree in physics is in nuclear and solid state physics. So when I started reporting on the use of rods from God weapon from the U.S. military in Ecuador to strong arm them as an extortion into signing World Bank loans, clearly I hit a nerve on somebody or some group of people who were interested in getting President Correa out of there. And so anyway, he's in his third term. Okay, well, I'm not going to talk a lot about that. I'll go try and go in order on my notes here. There's some real interesting things happening in my world of water filters, and there's some changes going on. I think you'll be interested in understanding what I'm doing here, but it's going to make prices actually come down and give you more value for your money, and make the sales page easier to maneuver, and just things on my end also make them easier. So at any rate, I'll be talking a little bit about that. First of all, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that wonderfully big funded government agency, made its hurricane prediction for 2016. Now, this came in from, the first time I saw it was from a person that works in the travel industry. And this is the garbage they're sending out to the professional world. And, of course, this gets direct drive because, hey, it's a government agency. They must be right, right? Anyway, this is so pathetic. So pathetic. I just could not even believe it. But they start out by saying that the 2016 hurricane season, there's a 45% chance of a near normal season. They don't say above normal or below normal. They say near normal. And this is like saying there's a 50-50 chance that it's going to rain and be sunny between now and November. Of course, the hurricane season is June 1st to November 30th, but lo and behold, we've already had our first hurricanes back in January. So they're not even right about that. I mean, these people are just a bunch of clown idiots. That's the mild, kind thing you could say about a bunch of PhDs who get their money from the government, and their leader, Bill Gray, a number of years ago, quit And he's the one that led the team to develop all of this. And he said, hey, there's not a single ounce of value in any of this that they're doing. But it's just absurd to say 45%. I'll read it again here. This is reading from from their prediction. 45% chance of a near normal season. If anybody out there understands what this means, I used to teach statistics at the university level, so I know about statistics. This doesn't say anything. It's absurd that a group of people would get paid to say this, and the rest of it goes downhill from there, so it's not even worth reading. What a bunch of pathetic losers. I'll just give some statistics. I wanted to recap this on Ecuador, just one little bit of statistics here, comparing it to Hiroshima. 50,000 people in Hiroshima died when the nuclear bomb hit, and Obama is over there, you know, a complete idiot. I mean, he made no reasonable statement there at all. He just talked about, well, the sky's blue, and yeah, there was, you know, we're all here, we're gathered here today, and, you know, that kind of stuff, but it had absolutely zero content. He should join NOAA when he gets done being president. He could be the person that reads the line, 45% chance of near normal season. Anyway, Hiroshima had 50,000 dead immediately after the bomb blast, and of course, the bomb goes off up in the air. Many people may not know that. With nuclear bombs. And the idea is that the radiation in the tremendous heat and the shockwave is what does the initial killing, but the after wave of radiation is what kills another wave of people. Another 100,000 people died in Hiroshima, but after long-term radiation poisoning. In Ecuador, 50,000 people were rendered homeless, and 100,000 people had radiation poisoning after the bomb, which was sent in with a rod from God on April 16th this year. And I finally put together a bit of a scenario of what had to have happened there. And we saw the double flash on the security cameras. I mean, it was very visible. There was a double flash prior to the earthquake. And, of course, you got Rutgers University saying, oh, that's Ecuador's, or that's earthquake luminosity. No, earthquake luminosity is a very faint light, kind of a glow that you can see prior to some earthquakes at night. Not at, you know, 6:40 in the evening when it's still light out. And streaking across the sky like a meteor. sorry, Rutgers University ding-dong. There you go again. You have PhDs saying this from their high, you know, level university position. Complete garbage coming out of their mouths. Complete garbage. That a rod from God asteroid-looking object coming into the atmosphere causing the earthquake was somehow related to earthquake luminosity, so a topic I developed with Russian scientists back in the 90s because the Russians were trying to understand this. But the numbers, if you look at the numbers of Ecuador, the statistics show 50,000 homeless and 100,000 with severe radiation poisoning, many of whom will die from that eventually in their lifetime. And this is women, children, men, everybody. Everybody had this there, not reported a single bit in the news media. And, of course, it comes right back to the IMF, also the Inter-American Development Bank, which is another group of the boys, and the CIA out there manipulating, managing the military weapons. That's what happened. There's no question about it. Okay. Let me talk a little bit about the sales page design. This is very important. Even if you're not going to buy water filter products right now, it's very important to understand what I'm doing. And it's my web page, if you looked at it, got a bit complicated because I introduced the new Imperial filters. The Imperial filters are double diameter, the same exact technology GF filters, my GF filters, which take everything out in a single filter element, and the just understand the physics or the mathematics of this. If you double the diameter on a cylinder, that's what these are, they're a cylinder. If you double the diameter, you multiply by 2 the surface area. So that means the flow rate is double. So you get double the flow rate, which means you can use one of these where you used to use 2. And in fact, in a canister, like even the bigger stainless or even in the bigger plastic ones, a lot of people just use one filter element. That's what I do. I never put 2 or 3 filter elements in one of these. In overnight, you can filter so that it fills up the entire container. Not a problem. Also, they fit the Imperials, the double-wide filters, fit in the Traveler. And so I had this complicated situation where I had the standard filters and then they had the Imperials. So some people would buy the container with 2 or 4 filter elements of the standard size, and then they'd buy a 10-pack of the Imperials. You know, so it was kind of difficult, and people had to search around and everything like this. So I made a decision, and it turns out to be a very good decision for you and for me. And so this is the way it's going to be going forward as soon as I get the new web page up and everything like this. And for people who have purchased in the past, just understand that, you know, as technology develops and, we didn't even have the GF filters a year and a half ago. They just came online, and now we've got the double wide, and we're starting to move to that understanding that it's a better deal for us and for you. Instead of making 2 different versions, we're going to concentrate on just making the Imperial. Here's why. If you buy 8 Imperials, it's the same price as 10 of the standard size, but you're getting about 3.5 times the filtration capacity. Now, in the filter itself, the GF, the intelligent part of the filter, is that it targets the toxins, whether it's arsenic or fluoride or glyphosate or chloramines or heavy metals or whatever it is. It's contained, all of that is contained in the ceramic shell itself. Okay? And so with a double wide, you have 4 times the volume. You have 2 times the surface area, but you have 4 times the volume. And what that means is your filter, in terms of taking out arsenic and fluoride and chloramines and glyphosates and heavy metals, etc., in that whole laundry list of materials, you can see it in the spec sheet, your filter will last 4 times as long. So by buying 8 of the Imperials at the same price that you used to buy 10 of the standard size, you will have more filtration capacity. And so per dollar, it just makes sense. And plus, you only have to use one. I don't really know many people that have used two filter elements in their stainless steel or whatever. And remember, these fit any container of gravity filters that have been made over the past 15 years or more. They all have the exact same hole size. So these will replace, be honest with you, my biggest selling item is replacement filter elements. So people come in, and like I said, if you bought filters from me in the last year, the GF filters, they are the same exact technology as the Imperials. It's just that from a manufacturing point of view, to make 2 different filters, sizes of the exact same filter, we can do it. But what really makes sense is just to move everybody to the Imperials. And this is an evolutionary type thing. We didn't have the Imperials at the very beginning. So it's the other thing is we wait till a technology stabilizes, and then we can make a decision like this. So I made a decision. And so going forward, I'm only going to have the Imperial filters available, and of course they're more expensive, but you're going to buy less of them so that the cost point for their customer is going to be the same. And so the other thing I've done is I'm dropping the price of the stainless containers. And so by doing that, you're going to be able to get the Imperial filters for the same price as so if you buy a canister, like a stainless steel, either the kitchen standard, the bigger one, or the traveler, or if you buy the plastic one, now you're going to get the same number of filter elements, but the Imperials. So there's a logic to what I'm doing, and so I'm trying to, I take a hit on the filter, on the canister end, and give you the same price. So your prices, in a sense, are not going up. What you're going to do is you're going to pay the same amount of money. You're going to get fewer filters of the Imperials, but you have much more filtration capacity, if you understand what I mean. So anyway, that's what's going on the sales page. So, and also, I encourage people, the page is stabilized. We've got a lot of things in place. The sales page itself did not get hit. It was my home page and my radio show page. That's what got hit in the attack here, because they didn't want people listening to my shows because they were going viral. People were listening to these all over. People were tweeting and people were directing people to my page to listen to these shows. There were people in all over Ecuador. There were people in Russia listening, high-level diplomats around the world listening to my radio shows. So they had to shut me down so that people would not know about this. By the way, I did a show with Joyce Riley, and next Wednesday, the 8th of June, I will be starting a once-per-month regular appearance on the Joyce Riley Show, the Power Hour. And I've been on there many times in the past, of course, but at random times. But now I'm going to be a set time. And, of course, every Wednesday morning, I'm on the John Moore Show at 6 o'clock Central Time, the first hour, John's first hour, every Wednesday morning. And now, every second Tuesday of the month, every second Tuesday, no, I'm sorry, I got, let me just start this over. I'm every on John Moore Show every Wednesday morning, 6 a.m., I am on John Moore Show every Wednesday, 6 a.m., Central Time. Joyce Riley's show every Wednesday morning, the second Wednesday of the month, in her second hour. So I believe that's 8 o'clock Central Time, but check that out. It's Joyce Riley's second hour, the second Wednesday of every month. And then possibly more as other things arise, but that'll be a set time, and that'll go into the future. And I'll be doing a lot more interviews now to get this word out. But there's no question I hit the nail on the head on this deal in Ecuador. They thought they'd get away with it. And the thing is, 100,000, this the thing I started to say at the very beginning of the show is that now I understand, I believe, what happened. This is my interpretation, and I believe it's correct, is that the first rod from God on April 16th, that was the first 8-point whatever earthquake in Ecuador, the big one, that had about 200 aftershocks, which, by the way, I was about 200 miles from the epicenter myself when that happened. So I knew what happened, but I was not in an area where the radiation clouds came through. That basically came up the coastline, and that's not where I was. I won't say where I was, but I was not in the radiation path, so I did not get radiation poisoning, but I started to hear about it, and then I confirmed it because I was literally right there. And so I personally confirmed the radiation poisoning, the radiation source spots all over the people's bodies, the kids, the women, the adults, the men, everybody had it. The hospitals were overflowing. All of the hospitals, all of the drugstores sold out of creams and salves, which was the wrong thing to do because with radiation, you have to get that dust off of you because it's the dust. And so what happened, that first rod from God on April 16th, it didn't penetrate deep enough. And if you understand, these things are coming in at probably you know, a couple thousand miles an hour. They've slowed down by the time they're getting down to actually hitting the Earth. And that's another topic I'm going to be talking about, is the misunderstandings about how these come into the atmosphere. I'm going to be talking about that tonight. And the orbital dynamics of a rod from God coming into the atmosphere and why they come in horizontally. But when this one hit on April 16th, it didn't penetrate deep enough. And so when the charge went off, it was surface. And we can see that from the security cameras. The first light explosion of light on the security cameras came as the rod from God hit ground, and that blows a projectile down into the ground, kind of like an armor-piercing tip. And the second flash of light came very soon afterwards. That's when the nuclear explosion went off, blew a huge dust cloud into the air, and it was 3 or 4 days later when up the coastline the people started getting the radiation poisoning. And that's when I realized what was going on. I didn't, you know, it took me some time to get there and find out what was going on. So I started reporting about this in early May, when it all started to make sense, what had happened, the radiation poisoning, etc. But the radiation poisoning symptoms started about 4 days after, so that would be about April 20th, when they started and continued for the next 10 days. Where and some of the people went into the ocean, they came out and they had it all over them, so they got severe radiation poisoning. And what it is the dust gets on your skin and creates radiation burns, you know, basically very high degree, even more than third degree burns on the skin and all over. So you have red spots all over the skin. That's radiation poisoning. When I took my advanced degree, my physics degree is at Tulane University. My nuclear medical courses I took at the Tulane Medical School. I know what I'm talking about. I probably have better information on this than any medical doctor in the field. And so I know what I'm looking at, the illness, the vomiting, the severe radiation poisoning in these people. But just with total impunity, the people that did this. And of course, when I started talking about it, that's when they slam dunked my radio shows, my any ability to get out there and talk about this. Okay. But anyway, talking about the orbital dynamics, there are lots of misconceptions in the public mind because of bad science. I mean, NASA, if NASA were a decent space agency, which it is not, the public at age kindergarten would be well educated on the topics of orbital dynamics and what happens when somebody is weightless condition around Earth in orbit. And what's going on is there's a centrifugal force that's pulling people outwards. It's like a satellite on the end of a string, except it's a gravitational string. It's not a physical string. And then there's the gravitational force in the other direction, so you end up to be weightless. So a person moving in a satellite or in a spacecraft through outer space, if you came by Jupiter and went through its moon system or whatever, and this is what Einstein very aptly expressed as the space-time curvature, because what you're doing is you're not going in a straight line. You're going through a line that is designated by the gravitational fields. And these are not electric. It's not related to electric anything. This is purely gravitational field. Unfortunately, there's some clowns running around the Internet talking about electricity being the cause of gravity. It's not true, never was true, never will be true. But that's, you know, just an aside note. Okay, but if you're in orbit around the Earth in a satellite, you are weightless. You do not feel a force. Okay? But let's do something. Let's imagine that you're in orbit around Earth and you have to come in out of orbit. So some people think, oh, well, you just fire your rocket and push yourself down towards Earth, and you'll come down towards Earth. But what you're doing in firing that rocket is you're actually accelerating as you come down, and you start to move faster in the horizontal direction. So the closer you get to Earth, the faster you go. So what they do in an actual satellite to bring it down is they reverse thrust. They turn the thrusters around, and this is with the old space shuttle or the whatever. You turn the rockets around and you slow down. And so as you slow down, you drop out of orbit and you start coming into the Earth's atmosphere. Then it creates a drag. But what happens is you move horizontally as you do that. You don't want to come plummeting straight down into the atmosphere. All you want to do is slow down enough so you hit the atmosphere and the atmosphere does the braking. That's the way it works. But now in the case of a rod from God, it's a very massive, very heavy tube, basically. And I do have a picture of this now. I'll be posting that on my webpage. In fact, I'm going to have a special subpage just for this Ecuador issue. So you can go there, listen to all the shows, listen to all the other shows that I've done, you know, the Brian Porter show up in Canada, the Joyce Riley show, and you can listen to all my shows and then read the commentaries and things like that that I've had all on one subpage. And then as future information comes in, I'll be able to put it on that specific subpage. Plus, my shows will be also posted on the regular radio show subpage, the archive subpage. But, let's imagine a rod from God. It does not have a braking mechanism. They simply shoot it out like kind of like a torpedo out of a submarine. And this, once you see the photo of the rod from God housing a satellite, it looks like, the best thing I can describe it as is like a Gatling gun. It's a bunch of tubes, and the rockets are loaded into the tubes, and they then just blast them out. They blast the rods from God's out, and they can target them very accurately, of course. And basically, they push them down towards Earth. So when this happens, it's different than, say, an Apollo or a space shuttle coming out of orbit where they do retro braking with the rockets firing backwards. The rods from God, they just send them down and they send them down at an angle fairly steep. But a lot of people would have the image that, oh, well, that's just going to come down straight down to Earth. But no, the Earth is spinning and these things are in orbit. So as they come down into the atmosphere, as they approach the atmosphere, they start to accelerate. And this is part of coming down into a lower orbit. This is the orbital dynamics part. It still has the same energy. You're pushing it into a lower orbit, so it's going to speed up. It's going to convert that potential energy into kinetic energy, and it's going to speed up. And so the end result is that even though you fire it in a downward direction, as it comes into the atmosphere, it's moving horizontally. And that's why the rods from God have this very characteristic, and it's something that they're not going to be able to get rid of, this characteristic of coming in horizontally. You see them coming across the sky, like a, you know, almost like an airplane path. But of course, they look somewhat like an asteroid. But if you know what you're looking for, they have a very thin tail that stays up in the atmosphere for a very long time. A typical asteroid smoke cloud or the that comes off an asteroid that comes in is very short-lived. The rods from God's trail is very long-lived. They stay up there for a very long time. In fact, after the May 18th earthquakes, there were three rods from God that came in causing the May 18th earthquake. And those trails stayed up in the night sky. This was 3 a.m. The first earthquake hit. The people go running out into the streets and look up, and there are these big three streaks across the moonlit sky. Almost immediately, the clouds start to form. This is a perfectly clear moonlit sky, 3 o'clock in the morning. the people are looking up and going, what's that? And there's the three streaks from the three rods from God that came in on May 18th across the sky. And then almost immediately clouds start to form because obviously they're using HAARP to create, using HAARP to create the cloud cover to cover up the three rod from God trailings. And then there's airplanes flying all over the place, not going someplace, just flying around. And the people saw these. These were observing airplanes, observing what was going on with the three rods from God. And of course, by this time, I had already been reporting of the radiation sickness and that the first one had gone off too close to the surface. So clearly, in those levels, they knew what happened. The people that did this. And that's one of the horrendous things, too, is the number of people involved in false flags or like 9/11, which was a total inside U.S. job with the Mossad and Saudi Arabia. All of them had their fingers in that pudding. But now they're all pointing fingers at each other trying to duck and hide. But be that as it may, what I wanted to make sure you understand is when these rods from God's come out of orbit, they don't come straight down. Because of orbital dynamics, as they're pushed down out of the canister, the satellite canister, they start to accelerate. So they actually end up going much faster in what we would view as a horizontal direction, in other words, parallel to the surface of the Earth. And of course, they're in orbit. And so then they hit the atmosphere and they're moving horizontally. And as they drop down slowly in the atmosphere, they have a heat shield on the front, which burns off. And that's what protects the whole thing from burning up. As it comes in, there's a heat shield that burns off. And that's what gives it this very long, thin smoke trail, because that burning heat shield follows the length of the tube and then comes back off the end. You see that little turbulent but a very thin vapor trail coming off the back end of the rod from God with a very bright glow up at the front end. That's what they look like. So you can tell a rod from God easily from an asteroid. And all of these earthquakes in Ecuador were accompanied by rods from God. No question about it. The security cameras on April 16th, it was just dark enough. It was 6:40 at night, April 16th. The security cameras, you could see them go flash, flash, like that. And in doing that, I could make calculations and determine how deep they were based on the time between the flashes. And I estimate that the nuclear blast probably went off no more than 500 meters deep. It must have hit some rock or some other miscalculation on the part of the people that sent this in. But it went off prematurely and caused a severe surface earthquake. And then the cloud of nuclear ionized radiation came blowing out, and that's what caused the radiation sickness up the coastline. So 100,000 people with radiation sickness, and the local medical community telling the people that this was due to dengue or Zika virus, or some people were told that this was due to sick people or dead people in the area. Just absurdities, total absurdities, what these people were told when they had radiation sickness. And of course, the problem is that there's nobody to turn to. Joyce Riley asked me when I was on her show, she said, Jim, who do you talk to when you talk about this, or who do you go to? There's nobody to go to. Let me just talk about the opposite orbital dynamics of getting something into a stationary orbit, a geostationary orbit around Earth, and that's around 22,000 miles up from the Earth. That's where the satellites are when you watch TV or you have satellite internet or something like that. If you're satellite radio, whatever, these satellites are in geo orbits around Earth. And So how do you get a satellite up to a geo orbit? Well, let's compare it to a low Earth orbit, where you send a rocket up. By the way, rockets are not the way to go into space. Going off a runway is the way to go into space, and then landing on a runway. This whole rocket program was a complete farce from the very beginning. Just something to placate the public to make you think that it's hard to go into outer space. It's not. You go off from an airport. Any airframe, 727, 737, up to the bigger planes, the airframes are fully capable of going into outer space and coming back without any problems at all. If you put a little bit of Teflon on the bottom of the wings, at the front of the wing, etc., and on the nose, you could come in. Remember, the very first space shuttle came in with half the tiles missing. Nothing happened. You know, the problem with the space shuttle is very massive. So when it hits the atmosphere, there's a lot of energy expended in getting it back into the atmosphere and slowing down. But an airplane like a 727 is very light compared to the shuttle. And in fact, the guys used to joke that the shuttle was a flying brick. And that's literally what it was, a brick with little wings on it. But if you added something like a 727 coming back in, if you reverse thrust with cryogenic engines, which all of this is very doable, you could go into space and come back in a standard airframe jetliner that's built by Boeing or Airbus or anybody. Very standard procedure, but nobody will do it because, I don't know what they're waiting for. But the airframes themselves are very capable. Certainly something like a Learjet. Certainly the military has all kinds of aircraft that can come off of a runway, go up into outer space, and come back. And, of course, that's kept from the public as kind of secret knowledge, so to speak, to make sure that you don't think about going into space. And electromagnetic propulsion systems are literally much easier to build. There's a lot of indication that ancients had those. My book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, talks about that. Okay, but at any rate, let's imagine going up to a geosynchronous orbit. First, you go up to a low Earth orbit. But how do you get up there? A low Earth orbit is about, 120 miles above the surface of the Earth. So you're about 4,000 miles from the center of the Earth. You have to get up another 20,000 miles to get into geo orbit. So how do you do that? Well, you have to put energy into the system. In other words, you have to have a rocket thruster to get you up into that higher orbit. And now what happens when you do that? As you go up into a higher orbit, you're going to move in an angular sense, you're going to move slower, because in a low Earth orbit, you're moving at around 17,000 miles an hour. So you're literally going around the Earth every, let's say, 90 minutes, approximately. In a geosynchronous orbit, you're sitting right over a particular spot over the equator all the time. So you would think, you're in a lower energy state. No, you have to put energy because you're fighting gravity, so to speak. You're getting out farther from the Earth, so you have to put more energy into the system. And the end result is that in the angular sense, you're moving much slower. But just imagine now you're in a much bigger circle. So literally, you're going much faster in the linear velocity sense. And so end result is that you have a much more energy in the geosynchronous orbit. Now, when you come back down out of a geosynchronous orbit and you try and get back down to Earth, you have to get rid of all of that energy. You have to put the brakes on, so to speak. And here is the problem with something called they call it the space elevator. There's all kinds of names for it, where they claim, and this goes back to who was it? My brain is not thinking of the name right now. but the guy that used to write about space, Arthur C. Clarke, thank you. Arthur C. Clarke had the idea of drawing a big line out, putting a weight at the end in a geosynchronous orbit, and then you could ride up this line like an elevator all the way up to geosynchronous orbit. But the problem is, if you try and go straight up in with a rocket, now if you look at the rockets that come out of the Cape or out of Edwards Air Force Base, if you look at the rockets, as they're going into orbit, they get up a little ways out of the thick part of the atmosphere, and then they bend off and they start going near horizontally, because they have to put all that energy into horizontal velocity to get it into orbit. What if you try and just go straight up? Well, what's going to happen is there's going to be a tremendous force on you in the backwards direction. You have to overcome this with velocity in the forward direction to get something into orbit. So in your space elevator, you have to carry extra fuel to keep you going vertically, because orbital dynamics, the Earth is spinning, your weight out there at the end of the so-called space elevator is spinning. And so people have this concept that you just ride right up this space elevator and you go out into outer space, totally oblivious to the fact of how physics works in orbital dynamics. You would have to put a tremendous amount of force in the forward direction to keep you going straight up. Because as you go up, just imagine it this way. The Earth is spinning. As you go up, you have to go faster and faster to keep above that same spot on Earth. And the farther up you go, the faster you have to go. And so where does that forward motion come from? It's not free. And so this idea of a space elevator is completely bogus. Additionally, it would discharge the vertical electric field between the ionosphere and Earth, and you would have all this energy pouring down. It'd probably burn up your space elevator before it ever got off the ground, is literally what would happen because of the space capacitor between the ionosphere and ground. Tremendous amounts of energy. By the way, which I'm making some strides at actually measuring and understanding the exchange between the ionosphere and Earth. If you read my weather book and my weather work, etc., you'll understand that that's the energy that drives hurricanes, tornadoes, etc. The standard meteorological story is that, oh, clouds just brush by each other and tornadoes form. Well, no, there's all kinds of stories about tornadoes forming out of the clear blue sky. And, or hurricanes forming in the North Atlantic where there's no warm water. They say that hurricanes are formed from warm water. It's a completely ridiculous story. Hurricanes form on Mars, and there's no oceans at all. So hurricanes are not a result of warm water. Another scientific fairy tale, courtesy of NASA and NOAA and all in the Hurricane Prediction Center. How can people predict hurricanes, this NOAA hurricane prediction? How can they predict hurricane season when they don't even know what causes hurricanes? You know, they had one in January. What would cause one in January? Yeah, no, there's no, that's the middle of winter. anyway, I don't know. Things are so pathetic today. And at the core of all of this is bad, bad science. This just in from a listener. A situation in Colorado, as you know, the EPA has stopped over 100 monitoring stations in the United States from monitoring radiation. The reason they did this was because the radiation readings were off scale. And they didn't know what to do about it. They didn't want to tell the public. They were told not to tell the public. So they've been hiding the information. But this just in from a listener. The high gamma CPM reported by the EPA. And this is in Denver. They're saying that the average person in Denver has 13 times more radiation in a month. This was measured in the last August. It had 13 times more radiation than the annual the annual allowable dosage. And so, of course, they don't talk about where this is coming from. But anyway, the entire United States is under nuclear attack, basically. This is going to come out in the future, in sickness and illness, etc. But behind this is an extremely corrupt medical industry, pharmaceutical industry, the EPA, complete corruption, head to tail, top to bottom, not reporting to the public, shutting down sensors so they don't have to report nuclear radiation that is going to eventually cause people to be sick in the United States. The die-offs in the western coast of South America, the marine die-offs, and as I reported, Brian Porter mentioned this, that in the pictures of all these dead fish when they wash up on the shore, there's no birds. There's no birds there eating the dead fish. There should be million birds flying around, going crazy with all this great fish to eat. But you don't see a single bird because all the birds have already died. This is Fukushima. The radiation from Fukushima killing the Pacific Ocean, including inland lakes in South America, are being killed off. And the bonehead scientists are saying this is due to algae bloom. Well, scientists, the algae bloom is in the ocean, and it's not what is causing massive die-offs of the entire Pacific Ocean. I'll be doing more independent coverage, news coverage of the. I've been invited to do some special shows on simply on nuclear radiation and getting the concept out there of what's going on in the world of radiation, because the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, the laundry list of alphabet soup agencies that are there, the Atomic Energy Commission, that are there to protect the public relative to radiation, are, you know, the EPA. These people they take their money and, buy their groceries, pay for their house bill, pay for the kids' college, but they don't do anything for you. They're completely corrupt, corrupted science from top to bottom. And the last thing anybody will talk about today is nuclear radiation. And that's another reason why this thing in Ecuador, it was a little accident. It was something that apparently was not supposed to happen. But then when it happens, they do a complete cover-up, and then when somebody like myself starts reporting, I get slam-dunked. It was, like I said at the beginning, I don't make anything off of doing that reporting. It's not a benefit to me. I have many other things that I had on my plate to do, and now I'm beset with probably weeks of work trying to rebuild my webpage, getting it back to normal. That's in a time when I was doing many other things as far as manufacturing and the water filter business, et cetera, doing these changeovers to go to the Imperials. I mean, I have all this stuff to do. I didn't need to have my web page bomb and all my email shut down and all my business shut down for weeks. That's not a benefit to me. That, believe me, that is not a benefit. That's not something that I look forward to. But I'm not going to let something like this go unreported. This is something that I'm going to pursue. I'm going to continue to pursue it. I don't know what these people are thinking, that Jim McCanney's just going to go away and hide in a corner someplace. Ain't going to happen. Someday there's going to be accountability for what happened in Ecuador. But they're under siege, just like Venezuela, just like all the other countries with the sanctions. All you get in the United States or in Europe is the fabricated news that comes out of the spin machine up there. And it has nothing to do with reality. The people in Venezuela very well know what's going on. They're being... what they're trying to do, it's the old Sheriff of Nottingham thing. They're going to try and hurt the public so that then they get rid of the Robin Hood. And that's literally what the Chavez party is about in Venezuela, is giving the money back to the people. But they've been severely limited because the war where Russia spun out of the petrodollar, started trading out of the petrodollar, and Saudi Arabia started producing oil, driving the price down to, you know, very low levels, and was the main source of international revenue for Venezuela. Somebody had a very good idea last night. I was on Brian Porter's show up in Canada, and they mentioned that these countries, all of these countries, have dual financial systems. They should have an international monetary system, and they should have the local system, because there's no reason why, and China is already doing this. China protects its own people, and so the internal economic monetary system of China is different than their international monetary system. And, of course, you can enter and move in those. One suggestion that I saw Trump do is he said he's going to do away with the international monetary exchange rate fluctuations. And that is every day. If you go to any country in the world, go just look up exchange rates on the Internet and pull up a table, like any table, between the United States dollar and other countries, and they go up and down and up and down about 50 times a day. That's, literally thousands of times per month. And when that change occurs, the money changers, we all know who they are, make money. They short sell, they long sell, every time those changes occur, they make money. And there's no money to be made here. It's the money changers doing the same thing that Christ threw them out of the temple for, 2,000 years ago. They're doing the same thing, except legally, and Trump wants to shut that down, because if you're a businessman, how can you do business when you write a contract one day and a month later, the exchange rate wipes out all your profit? You can't do business like that. It just prohibits somebody from doing business. So anyway, I'm not a huge Trump fan, but he's a million times better than anybody out there. So at any rate, I got about a minute left in this show. Just remember, go to the web page and take a look at the new sales page, which is a modern sales page. People keep using the old sales page, but the new page is going to be what's going to be there in the future. And remember that going forward, the Imperial filters will be the only ones that I'm selling. They're exact same technology. There's the older filters, the standard size, the exact same technology. Nothing has changed there. It's just that now we have the manufacturing capability to move into making a singles. And this doesn't affect the personal filters are still going to be the little 5-inch. They're the mini ones. We want a small filter in those. I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. Go to jmccsci.com. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.